This is VSiN's College Football Betting Podcast.
Welcome in another edition of the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. I'm your host, Tim Murray. Happy 4th of July week to all. We're going to have a couple of episodes this week. Got to get this one out today, Monday, depending on when you're listening to it. And then we've got another podcast set to come out later this week. Went through some situational spots, some over-under bets, some win total bets with Joshua Nunn of the Action Network. So that'll be later this week. Today, we're going to catch up with Brad Crawford from 247 Sports, from CBS Sports as well. Talk some long shots in the Heisman Trophy market, as well as a couple of maybe undervalued and overvalued teams when it comes to the SEC. So we'll get to that conversation here in just a little bit. But I want to get this podcast out today because of the news that came out on Sunday. So we've talked a lot on this podcast about the Big 12 and how fascinating it is. We even discussed on the last episode about the news that came out from Brett McMurphy. And shout out to our guy, Brett McMurphy, headed to On3 Sports. Congrats to you, Brett. That they are doing away with the Big 12 is the preseason media poll. Because last year, the team picked dead last, won the conference, and the team picked first, Utah, did not make a bowl game. So they're doing away with that. And even last week, talking to the Bear, Chris Felica, he felt like Houston was maybe worth a long shot bet at around 35 or 40 to 1 to win the Big 12. And then we get news on Sunday that Jake Retzlaff is going to leave the program. Jake Retzlaff, the returning quarterback for BYU, helped guide them to an 11-2 win season a year ago. Pretty messy situation unfolding there in Provo, as the initial reporting was that Jake Retzlaff was being accused of sexual assault in a civil suit from back in 2023. The news we got today on Monday, courtesy of Pete Thamel, is that the woman who accused Jake Retzlaff of sexual assault in a civil suit has withdrawn her civil suit. The paperwork has been filed to end the case. That according to Pete Thamel. Now, the unique wrinkle in all of this, and we've seen this before with BYU, whether it have been Brandon Davies of the basketball program, Jamal Williams a number of years ago, is that according to the school, you are not allowed to have premarital sex. So with that, Jake Retzlaff did say that they had consensual sex in 2023, and because of that, he was set to be suspended, according to reports, up to 7 games this year, and he has announced he will be withdrawing from the school. As pointed out, Retzlaff, not the first high-profile BYU athlete. 2011, it was Brandon Davies, who was dismissed from the team, who was 27-2 at the time, number 3 in the country. In 1999, Reno Mahe was suspended from the school and forced to leave the football team as well. So Jake Retzlaff, he has graduated from BYU. His name is expected to go into the transfer portal. Where he will land, who the heck knows, here as the calendar's about to turn to July. So we'll see where Jake Retzlaff ultimately lands. But what I want to focus on here is what's next for BYU, a team that many believed was a fringe top 25 team, a fringe playoff team, and a team that very well could win the Big 12 in 2025. A year ago, BYU, as mentioned, went 11-2, was tied for first, but due to tiebreakers, did not make the Big 12 championship game. They won a bunch of games as an underdog. They won 5 games outright as an underdog. They beat SMU as an 11-point dog, because remember, BYU was not expected to be very good last year, and Kalani Sitake's squad was definitely a massive overachiever, beating SMU 18-15 as an 11-point dog, beat Kansas State on a Saturday night, a wacky game. If I remember correctly, there was like a pick six and a punt return. It was one of the weirder games because Kansas State goes up to Provo, I believe Matt and myself both had BYU plus the points, and the game was never in doubt. But if you looked inside the box score, it was definitely not a 38-9 type of win. But regardless, they got the win as a dog there. They beat Baylor on the road as an underdog. They beat UCF on the road as an underdog. This was one of those teams where they were not valued very high in the betting market. They were a short favorite against Utah in the Holy War. They won that game, if I remember correctly, kind of in a wild fashion. I believe I had Utah plus the three in that one. And then the game that many of us recall, the stinkiest of all stinky lines last year, when BYU was seventh in the country and they were only laying two against, I believe, Kansas, who was 3-6 at the time. And lo and behold, regression ended up biting him in the butt and Kansas won that game. But we're not here to circle back to what happened last year. We're here to focus on the here and now. How is the market adjusted to the news that Jake Retzlaff is leaving BYU? So when this news unearthed on Sunday afternoon, the reports came out from Salt Lake City, and I was quick to take a look at the betting market and see, all right, what is going to happen? A couple of books quickly took them down. A couple of books left them up until the Pete Thamel report came out a couple hours later. So full disclosure, I did take a little nibble on under 7.5 wins at plus 140 at DraftKings. Interesting to note this, when I was going through all the win totals back in May, DraftKings had BYU at 8.5, juiced under at $1.50. As of yesterday, when the news came out, they were 7.5, juiced over at, I believe, minus 170, somewhere in that ballpark, plus 140 to the under. I texted Jeff Benson over at Circa, and I appreciate him getting back to me so quickly. And he let me know, here are the adjustments at Circa based off of the news of Retzlaff leaving. Odds went from 15 to 20 to 1 at Circa to win the Big 12. And they adjusted their win total from 7.5 juiced over minus 130 to 6.5 juiced over minus 140. FanDuel adjusted their odds from 10 to 1 to 19 to 1 to win the Big 12. And then Matt Grill, our friend and friend of the podcast, I reached out to him and I believe he was off yesterday. So I'm making him work on an off day. But he said the adjustments that they made over at DraftKings, they have not, as of recording, reposted their win total, but they went from around 8 to 1 to 16 to 1 to win the Big 12. And they were somewhere in the plus 380 market to reach the college football playoff, and they are now plus 850. So a little bit of adjustment there for BYU. Actually, not a little bit, a decent bit there. And I also reached out to a professional bettor out there, and I asked him how much he adjusted BYU with the news going on. He said conservatively, he's adjusted them down 3 points. We don't know what the week one line is because they're playing an FCS foe in Portland State. They get Stanford in week two, which should be a easier win. And then it kind of gets rolling after that. They have a bye week September 13th. Then it's at East Carolina, who's expected to be a decent team in the AAC, at Colorado, and then into the Big 12 schedule. They do not play Kansas State or Arizona State or Baylor, or Kansas. So they actually have a pretty nice draw when it comes to the Big 12 schedule this year, but who the heck is going to be their quarterback? If you look at their roster right now, they do have starting experience on their roster, albeit not at BYU. Their backup quarterback, from everything I can gather, is McKay Hillstead, who was at Utah State a couple years ago. Hillstead started 4 games at Utah State in 2023. He's not a big guy. He's under 6 foot, around 5'10". So McKay Hillstead, he probably is your favorite to be the week one starter. They also have Treyson Borgay, the former Western Michigan quarterback. I was listening to a couple of BYU podcasts. Apparently he just enrolled at Western Michigan, at BYU, and now is on scholarship and has been prior to the news coming out. But I don't know if he expected to be continuing to play football. He started 8 games over 2 seasons at Western Michigan in 2022. In 2023. So McKay Hillstead, probably, as mentioned, your favorite to start for BYU with Retzlaff gone. I would say the wild card is Bear Bachmeyer. So Bear Bachmeyer was a pretty big time recruit and ultimately signed with Stanford. Notre Dame was very interested in Bear Bachmeyer. And from the reports that are out there, Notre Dame opted to take a verbal commitment from Deuce Knight, who ultimately decommitted from Notre Dame and enrolled at Auburn. And I believe the Bachmeyer family was not thrilled with how the whole recruitment went after the Deuce Knight commitment. So Bachmeyer went to Stanford. Everything fell apart there at Stanford with Troy Taylor being fired. So he and his brother, Tiger Bachmeyer, both hit the transfer portal, landed at BYU. Bachmeyer, the name might sound familiar. Yes, he is the younger brother of Hank Bachmeyer, who started his career at Boise State, went to Louisiana Tech, finished up at Wake Forest. But Bear Bachmeyer would be the guy that I would keep an eye on at some point taking over as a starter there. I believe ESPN ranked him as the 11th best quarterback in this upcoming class. So messy situation there for BYU. Odds have shifted quite significantly across the board. Win total has moved from 7.5 down to 6.5. I wanted to read you the Scouting the Cougars, what an anonymous coach said about BYU. I always find these interesting. This is from Athlon, and this is what an opposing Big 12 assistant coach had to say about this BYU team heading into 2025 prior to the news, of course, that came out on Sunday that Jake Retzlaff would be leaving the program. Quote, "This is a physical defense that gives you real problems. I think they're successful because they're a development culture, and that culture is contact and aggression. Their style runs counter to the offensive mentality of the league really well, and they embrace contact. It's a hard place to play when you're on the road too. They could have played in and won the championship last year. I think they'll be right back there in the hunt with Retzlaff. If he can take that next step and redefine that the decision-making, they're going to be really hard to beat. If there's a weakness, it might be their offensive line. Picking up all the Utah guys in the portal was a pretty big statement for them. I think they're a legit power in this league." Well, if you take it from an opposing Big 12 coach, and having your offensive line maybe being your weakness this year, and now having a quarterback that is not going to be available, that is less than ideal. Phil Steele, by the way, for what it's worth, ranked BYU's offensive line as the 10th best offensive line in the league. This is a league that's got some really good quarterbacks, but once again, schedule, they get Utah at home. They don't have to play Baylor. They don't have to play Arizona State. They don't have to play Kansas State. They don't play Kansas. So schedule actually shapes up decently for them. I did take a quick nibble on under 7.5, but I might see how the market goes and see if I can middle this. So curious to see how this quarterback situation plays out. Less than ideal, and who knows where Jake Retzlaff could ultimately land. Now that the charges have been dropped, it would indicate that at least someone is probably going to take a shot on Jake Retzlaff now that he is leaving BYU, a guy who threw for 20 touchdowns last year. He rushed for 539 yards and an athletic guy. We'll see where Jake Retzlaff ultimately lands. Messy situation there at BYU, and a notable quarterback will not be with his team that he was expected to be on. So we'll see if Jake Retzlaff ends up landing anywhere here in the portal in the month of July. All right, please rate, review, and subscribe to the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. Once again, we'll have another episode later on this week. It's a fun conversation. I already recorded it with Joshua Nunn over at the Action Network. But we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Brad Crawford going to join the program, give us his thoughts on some long shots to maybe win the Heisman Trophy, as well as an undervalued and overvalued team, in his opinion, in the SEC. And as promised, Brad Crawford joins the podcast now. You can catch him at 247 Sports, also writing over at CBSSports.com. Some really interesting topics that he's dove into when it comes to college football. Follow him on social media at BCrawford247. And Brad, the reason that initially I wanted to have you on the pod, because you had a really fascinating article looking at long shots to win the Heisman Trophy. And, you know, during the summer months, it's certainly something we like to dive into. But before we get to that, one of your most recent articles was a best and worst case scenario in the SEC, and a team that we haven't discussed a ton about here on the podcast this summer, and I'm glad that you're going to jump into them, is LSU. Year number four for Brian Kelly. You know, it's been mixed results. They've had some big wins, but they haven't gotten to the playoff. And you were of the mindset that maybe we're sleeping a little bit on the LSU Tigers heading into this year.
Yeah, I think based on that season opener against arguably a top five Clemson team, if LSU goes into the other Death Valley and beats the preseason ACC favorite, a team many have picked to make the CFP, then I think LSU's summer stock all of a sudden just flourishes. I mean, you can buy at a mid-level rate right now on the Tigers, and then if they win that season opener, which they haven't done, by the way, since Joe Burrow and the Tigers won it all in 2019, they've lost like five straight season openers. If they do go into Clemson and win that game, which I think Brian Kelly and his team can do, then you're going to see a lot of people all of a sudden, you know, buying futures on LSU. But this offseason, man, they have spent more money in the SEC than any other program in that league on its roster. Number one ranked transfer portal class, according to our rankings at 24/7 Sports. And they have a guy at quarterback in Garrett Nussmeier, who I believe will be the top pick in the 2026 NFL draft. So this is a show-me season for Brian Kelly. And I do think LSU right now is being undervalued a bit nationally.
So when you look at them just based off of the odds to make the playoffs, they're a plus price. They're the shortest plus price. But, you know, one thing, Brad, we've talked about a ton on this podcast is really looking at the eight favorites to make the playoff and talking about the questions they have at quarterback, whether it be Ohio State, Texas, Oregon, Georgia, Notre Dame, Clemson, et cetera. But LSU at plus 125 to make the playoff. And they've got a quarterback, as you alluded to, in Garrett Nussmeier. So do you think that short plus price is worth a look, or would you wait and see how week one unfolds? Because it's kind of an interesting dynamic. They win that game, Brad, at Clemson, where they're a three-point underdog, and they're a massive favorite. I won't say massive. They're a favorite to make the playoff. Sure. If they lose it, it shifts back a little bit, but certainly still could overcome a loss to Clemson. So how would you attack LSU right now from a futures market?
Yeah, you can buy now or you can wait until after that game. I mean, the price is going to change, like you said, whether it goes up or down. But even with a loss at Clemson in that season opener, I think LSU is going to be a 10-win team, maybe a second or third place finisher in the SEC. Not my preseason SEC favorite, but 10 wins in the SEC with that schedule, notably Clemson as a non-conference, you know, heavyweight matchup, that's going to be more than enough to make the expanded playoff. So I mean, I have LSU as a 10-win team. Obviously, the price will probably be plus 190, plus 200 or so if they lose that season opener. So you can buy now or you can buy future, but I don't think the week one game is going to be necessarily indicative of how LSU will play the rest of the way if it does go south on the road. I mean, there's several games, top 25 games LSU is going to have that are favorable. They get Florida in Baton Rouge. They get South Carolina in Baton Rouge. They get Texas A&M in Baton Rouge. So you're looking at a schedule that I think sets up for success.
Win total sitting at 8.5. Juice varies, minus 135 to the over at Circa, minus 140 to the over at DraftKings. So in your article, once again, you did a best and worst case scenario and a team that continues to get a lot of hype nationally heading into this year. I think a lot based off of the success of last season, how they finished said season, is South Carolina. And, you know, Shane Beamer and company, now you were, you know, flying under the radar a little bit heading into last year. You win nine games. You do lose your bowl game, but you bring back Lenora Sellers, who's getting a whole lot of Heisman hope out there. So when you look at South Carolina, do you think this is a team maybe we're getting a little bit too excited about?
I think so. And the hype's only going to grow because September, the Gamecocks do not play a top 25 team. That doesn't start until they go on the road at LSU in October. But this Gamecock team, man, they lost five starters on defense, all who were drafted, including Kyle Kennard, the SEC Defensive Player of the Year. I know a lot of folks point to sophomore edge rusher Dylan Stewart, former five-star, is kind of a sensational player, and he is that. But last season, he didn't face double teams because he had Kennard on the other side of the line, and he had 10.5 sacks. So not only did the Gamecocks lose key pieces in the secondary, but they lost, you know, one of the SEC's top pass rushers. And then you look at offense. Lenora Sellers signed a big contract to be retained in Columbia. The problem is they didn't sign any wide receiver help in the transfer portal, and their top transfer addition, Rasul Faison, in the backfield, has not been deemed eligible yet by the NCAA. And here we are entering July, and NCAA still has not given the Gamecocks an answer. He's a guy that had 1,200 yards last year at Utah State. So South Carolina right now, I think, as a preseason top 15 team, people are a little too high on the Gamecocks. They just lost too much talent. And the schedule in October, I mean, it's LSU, Oklahoma, Alabama, Ole Miss. That's four consecutive weeks. That is a brutal stretch for Shane Beamer and a team, like you said, that's not used to having some preseason hype. So I'm very interested to see if they can shoulder that burden at a program that's never made the playoff before.
Yeah, you look at September, I'm not just going to hand them the Virginia Tech game. Obviously, Virginia Tech is a little down, but I think that's a game that I think a lot of people are assuming in a neutral site. I believe that game is in Atlanta, if I remember correctly. You know, that people are just kind of handing that game to them as a 9.5-point favorite. And look, the odds are telling you that they're going to win that game. But I think that one could be kind of tricky. Vanderbilt on the road at Mizzou. And as you alluded to, October's brutal. You have to go to College Station in November. Obviously, you wrap up the season against Clemson in what will be a revenge spot for the Tigers after losing to South Carolina a year ago. Win total sits at 7.5, and the juice is on the under for the Gamecocks. So, yeah, that is certainly one of the teams, Brad, that have been getting a lot of hype in the preseason. Before we get to your article on some long shots to win the Heisman, which, once again, is a fun article to read and go through. And look, after last year and Travis Hunter winning it, and we talked to Chris Felica last week, who I believe had a 100-to-1 ticket on Travis Hunter, you know, this is something you probably should do. Look around and take a look at some long shots. I saw your projected CFP bracket, which is always a fun exercise to do. And I wanted to jump to the group of five, because Boise State obviously is the betting favorite to make the college football playoff outside of the P4. Right now, their odds to make the CFP, I think, are around plus 190 to make the playoff. So they are the shortest odds of any group of five team. But a team that you actually put in your bracket is Navy. Navy right now, 8-to-1 to win, to make the CFP. They are one of the betting favorites to win the AAC. So why are you bullish on the mids heading into this year?
The offensive line's back for the most part for the midshipmen. But for me, it's Blake Horvath, a quarterback, veteran guy who had 1,200 yards last season, is one of the FBS's leading quarterback rushers returning. And you look at the G5 conference in the American, that, let's be honest, it's the best, most complete and competitive league outside of the Power Four in college football. And the only game I think that Navy is going to be favored to lose in the conference is the roadie on Thursday night at Memphis. And that comes late in November, mm-hmm. and they get an open date before that. So the trip to South Bend is obviously probably going to be a loss for Navy, but an 11-1 finish going to the American Championship game, they could be playing for a spot in the playoff if they get there. And Navy's a team that not a lot of national guys are on right now. I know Memphis, Tulane, Boise State, as you mentioned, are kind of the G5 favorites, but Memphis has extreme value. I mean, Navy has extreme value for me right now, and it's a team that I'm picking to get to the playoff.
Yeah, it's funny when you think about that game at Notre Dame. It's going to be a primetime game at Notre Dame on November 8th, but it's a little bit of a wash because Boise State also goes to South Bend this year. So if Boise State and Navy both do what they're expected to do, if they were to lose to Notre Dame, it just kind of wipes off. Obviously, if one of them were to win, that would be a massive boost for both of them. But yeah, if you look at their schedule, Brad, heading into that showdown in South Bend, they will be a betting favorite in every game prior to the game they play at Notre Dame. Not to say they're going to win all of them, but I'm with you. Look, as someone who was on the Navy broadcast team for 3 years, from 2016 to 2018. When this program has a veteran quarterback, they are a different team. When you think about Keenan Reynolds, when you think about Malcolm Perry, when they've got a veteran quarterback who runs that offense, and this is kind of a unique offense that they changed things up just a year ago, bringing in a new offensive coordinator and Drew Kronick from Mercer. And we saw the success, and we saw, you know, it was interesting because you thought about it was four straight losing seasons for Navy. And I know many people believed, all right, well, here it is. You know, people have figured this out. The triple option, the AAC, maybe caught some people off guard. And, you know, credit to Brian Newberry to go out and find this new innovative offense to tweak that triple a little bit. So I'm with you. I'm excited to see the season for the mids. I'm always cheering for them. And that game in primetime in South Bend could be a battle of unbeatens. We'll see. Because remember, last year, Navy was undefeated when they played Notre Dame as well, kind of ran into the buzzsaw, so to speak, there at MetLife Stadium.
Yeah, and Navy plays fundamentally sound football. And then the key to this schedule for me is the midshipmen do not play Tulane or East Carolina, two teams I think are going to be high finishers in the American during the regular season. So it's a schedule that sets up for success. And, man, I tell you, all bets are off if they go into South Bend and win that game. Oh, then yeah, you're talking about a team that could afford another loss somewhere along that slate.
Yeah, there's no doubt. And what a conundrum it would be for the playoff committee if Navy was sitting there 11-1 as an AAC champ and had not played the Army-Navy game, because that game is scheduled, as always, after the bracket is revealed. All right, one last one I wanted to hit on with you. Speaking of teams who play Notre Dame, Miami. They open up the season at home against the Irish. Right now, Miami around a 3-point underdog. And Mario Cristobal's squad is one that, look, they blew it last year. Had a chance to go to the playoff. They lose to Syracuse, and they get left out of the dance. And right now, we talked about LSU as a team to make the college football playoff as maybe being a little bit undervalued. Miami is not too far out of the odds makers' minds, plus 160 to make the playoff. So when you look at the Canes this year, I know you in your projected CFP bracket have the Canes in there. What excites you about Miami this year and believes that they can make the CFP?
For me, it's Carson Beck and this show me season with Shannon Dawson as his new OC. I mean, last year did not go as planned for Carson Beck. He had a bad first half against Bama, played pretty well in the second half, looked like a future draft pick. And then down the stretch in that pro-style offense at Georgia, man, just made too many mistakes. And I think this Miami offense with Dawson, Mario Cristobal, it's quarterback friendly. We saw what Cam Ward was able to do. He chose to leave Washington State for the ACC program. Carson Beck now following his footsteps. This is going to be Beck's offense. He's got two veteran running backs back. They've spent a lot of money in the portal, like LSU, on wide receiver talent. And someone down there in South Beach, man, told me that this Hurricanes offensive line is the best in at least 10 years at the program. To me, that means Carson Beck's going to be kept upright and not going to have to worry about an injury or, you know, getting attacked with a blind side. So the biggest thing for me is, though, they have to split these two big first September games, Notre Dame in the opener and Florida. I mean, you can't lose both of those games before ACC play begins and expect to get to the playoff. They've got to split those two games. But I mean, Mario Cristobal has some pressure this year, just like Brian Kelly. He has not made the playoff yet with the Canes, despite all these resources now in that ACC program. So Miami, I'm taking as a playoff contender this season. Might even beat Clemson as the ACC champ.
Yeah, they do not play in the regular season, so could have a showdown there. In the ACC championship game, Miami's biggest games, no doubt, Notre Dame week one, Florida week four, get that at home, and then the road trip to SMU November 1st will be a big one for the Canes. All right, Brad, let's get to the article you wrote, which I think is a fun article to discuss this time of year as we're looking around to find a long shot. We talk ourselves into it. You know, people on this podcast know my long shot bet on the Heisman Trophy is Devin Dampier. We talked about that a couple weeks ago. The transfer from New Mexico going to Utah, he was at 100-1 at DraftKings. So took a little nibble there. And, you know, it's funny because I did this whole, I don't want to call it a dissertation, but I did this long open last summer about, you know, probably shouldn't bet the Heisman Trophy market in the summer months because it's going to be a quarterback, probably a top five team. And lo and behold, it's Travis Hunter, and the runner-up was Ashton Gentry. So maybe we're in a new world where we should be looking for those long shots. So I want to run through the names that you mentioned, and we'll start with Jeremiah Love, the running back for Notre Dame, a preseason, you know, top 10 team. He's projected to be a first-round pick. He's one of the cover boys for the college football game. So they certainly got some hype heading into this year. My question would be, is the workload going to be big enough for Jeremiah Love to ultimately be invited to New York City and to hoist that that trophy? So what jumped out to you regarding the Notre Dame running back?
Yeah, for me, he's got plenty of tread left on the tires. And I think you're getting a young rising superstar. It also helps that Notre Dame is starting a first-year starting quarterback too. I mean, there's a reason that Jeremiah Love is starting to get a little bit of hype. You know, he didn't have the best playoff last year. After that 90-yard run or so he had against Indiana, did not have a 100-yard game the last three starts despite Notre Dame getting to that final. The one issue I do have with Jeremiah Love is Jadarian Price is an equally talented back. And like you said, they may split that workload a little bit. But, I mean, there was no game last season in which Jeremiah Love had more than, I think, 15 carries. So there's plenty of tread, like I mentioned, on those tires. And he's going to be a guy that is the focal point of that offense, especially since Riley Leonard ran the ball, 190 times at quarterback last year. And while they still may have some plan in the quarterback run game, this is going to be a more balanced offense. And certainly I think Marcus Freeman trusts Jeremiah Love to kind of be the featured back there in South Bend.
Yeah, Dylan McCullough, running backs coach, departed for the NFL. He's now working just down the road from where I sit right now with the Raiders, but it wasn't like they went and got some random guy. They got Juwan Sider from Penn State, who knows a thing or two about having some talented running backs, because you could make a strong argument that Penn State has the number one running back room with Catron Allen and Nicholas Singleton, but the Irish loaded. And I was surprised that they were able to keep everybody. Maybe it just goes to show what Notre Dame's doing from an NIL standpoint, from a roster retention standpoint, to keep Aeneas Williams, to keep Kedron Young, in addition to Jadarian Price. So loaded room, no doubt, but a high-profile season coming for Jeremiah Love. The next couple of guys that you pointed out, I think, are pretty good buy-low options, in my opinion. And we'll start with Avery Johnson because, you know, Brad, I remember last year going to Big 12 Media Day here in Las Vegas and seeing Avery Johnson walk around with that beautiful set of hair that he's got. Yeah. And I was like, wow, that dude's bigger than I thought. And then just talking to people around Big 12 Media Days, there was so much hype and so much expectation for Avery Johnson. And I'm not going to say he was underwhelming, but he just didn't live up to it. And now it's almost an out of sight, out of mind deal, but 50-1 is a pretty interesting number for a guy that, you know, I think was like in the 30-1 range just a year ago.
Especially when the Big 12 is wide open. I mean, Kansas State's one of, a half dozen teams in that league capable of winning it and getting to the playoff. Not to mention he has a, you know, big time opportunity in week zero. If Avery Johnson has a 4-touchdown game against a ranked Iowa State team in Ireland, and everybody sees him as, you know, the quarterback in week zero before the season even starts, That's big time hype to get things started. He's already a household name nationally, maybe not to a lot of casual fans, but all betting insiders know who Kansas State quarterback Avery Johnson is. I think the light kind of came on down the stretch last year. I think he finished his final three starts with like 9 touchdown passes, 1 interception. He's a dual threat too, so that's going to help him potentially get to New York, but it speaks to Kansas State as a possible 9 or 10 win team, in my opinion, and maybe getting to the Big 12 championship game. When I'm betting early season, you know, long shots to win the Heisman, part of it is team success and being in the thick of the playoff conversation in November really matters. And I think that helped Travis Hunter, to be honest, last year before Colorado had a couple of those upset losses down the stretch. I mean, they were, you know, a 9-win team at one point with playoff expectations. So if Kansas State can, you know, get off to a hot start in September and Avery Johnson plays well early, he's going to be a factor.
Well, I think the point that you make is a great one, which is there's going to be no other game on. It's the first game of the season, noon Eastern, over in Ireland, Iowa State. It's not like they're playing some, you know, FCS opponent. This is Farmageddon. So it's an opportunity, no doubt, with plenty of eyeballs on Avery Johnson. So if he goes out and plays well, that 50-1 will be gone. And that's the name of the game, is trying to get the best of the number and seeing how it ultimately plays out. All right, this is the second episode in a row that we will bring up Jackson Arnold. And there may not be anyone more that you can buy low on than Jackson Arnold. Run out of Oklahoma. They bring in John Mateer. Everybody loves John Mateer. He's going to, you know, set the world on fire. And I don't doubt it. I think he's an exciting player, exciting prospect. I have my questions coming from Wazoo to Oklahoma. But Jackson Arnold goes into this Hugh Freeze offense, and we had the Bear on last week, and he really likes this Auburn team. He likes them to go over their win total. And in a similar situation, Brad, to what you just talked about with Avery Johnson, Friday night game on the road at Baylor, plenty of eyeballs, an opportunity for Jackson Arnold to kind of reestablish himself as a big-time quarterback in college football.
Yeah, and there's a reason that Jackson Arnold is a former five-star recruit. I mean, all the skills are there. And I know we saw his season very inconsistent last fall with the Sooners, but, I mean, four out of five offensive linemen were essentially hurt, and he got sacked a bunch of times in SEC play. I mean, the wide receiver core at Oklahoma was also banged up, had a lot of drops there, and he had another guy battling him for reps. Now, at Auburn, this is a very, very important season for Hugh Freeze. I would say he is on the SEC's hottest seat outside of Arnold's former head coach, Brent Venables, in Norman at OU. So Jackson Arnold has weapons, too, on the Plains. I mean, former five-star Cam Coleman. They signed two top 10 players at wideout from the transfer portal. They got a pretty good offensive line and running game behind them. So Jackson Arnold, I have not sold my stock on him. I think he is a top-level SEC quarterback, maybe not the best player at the position in the conference, maybe not even the second or third best, but Arnold's a guy who is going to play better in 2025 than what he's shown previously. And for Hugh Freeze, he has to. I mean, Freeze put all of his portal eggs in this Jackson Arnold basket, and I'm with Bear. I think Auburn goes over the win total and is one of those five or six SEC teams that is vying for a playoff spot down the stretch.
You know, what have you heard about the role for Ashton Daniels? He was a running quarterback at Stanford, put up big numbers at times. He was really the only thing that offense could look at for the majority of a year ago. So have you gotten any insight on what the role is expected to be for Ashton Daniels at Auburn?
I think it potentially could be a red zone type threat. You know, I don't think he was brought in to challenge Jackson Arnold. This is Jackson Arnold's offense. And Hugh Freeze has kind of come out and said that post-spring practice, during spring practice. You know, he's liked what he's brought to the offense. The offensive coordinator has said so. But instead of having to play a freshman, they have a guy like Ashton Daniels behind Jackson Arnold, where if anything goes wrong, you know, the plug will be pulled. But Auburn cannot afford to do what it did last season. I mean, with Peyton Thorne throwing a bunch of picks early, doing that rotational quarterback sense, and it just deteriorated as the season progressed. Hugh Freeze knows that's not the direction he wants to go. And he's not been a multi-quarterback guy during his coaching career either. So I think Ashton Daniels is more of a insurance policy for the Tigers, and this is Arnold's team.
Yeah, Arnold 60-1 at Circa, at DraftKings. So a pretty juicy price out there. Last week on the pod, I went through the Big Ten schedules and I kind of pinpointed a couple of teams that felt like they won the schedule lottery. And the one that immediately jumped out to me and led to a bet for me, Brad, was Nebraska. I bet over their win total of 7.5. You look at the month of September, you know, very manageable non-con. They play Michigan at home, which is nice, off of an FCS opponent the previous week in Houston Christian. No road game until October 11th, and that's no knock on my home state of Maryland, but that's, you know, a road game at Maryland. They avoid Ohio State. They avoid Oregon. And another reason I bet over was the addition of Dana Holgorsen late last season to be the offensive coordinator. And once again, the theme of your long shots is kind of buy low, right? Avery Johnson, ton of hype. Jackson Arnold at Oklahoma a year ago. Dylan Raiola, you know, the comparisons to Patrick Mahomes, he works out with him and he's a five-star recruit, all of this. And now it's kind of gone quiet in Lincoln. And when you look at the history, Matt Rhule at Temple, at Baylor, year three has always been a massive season for Matt Rhule. So Dylan Raiola, 70-1 to win the Heisman Trophy right now at DraftKings.
Yeah, I'm surprised you can get him at 70-1. I mean, you mentioned Nebraska's schedule, what Rhule has done in his third year at various programs, and Dana Holgorsen calling the shots. I mean, Marcus Satterfield, Dylan Raiola was never comfortable in that, you know, wide personnel pro-style look, and now Holgorsen is going to call plays and cater to his quarterback strengths. Raiola's not a runner. Holgorsen knows that. He's going to be able to throw it around. Nebraska signed plenty of portal talent at the wideout spot. They feel they're much better there. And there's a decent chance that Nebraska could be 8-0 going to November if they're able to beat Michigan, I think, in week four. Now, that's a tall task. Michigan will be ranked. Matt Rhule, winless against ranked teams. His last two coaching stops has not beaten a ranked opponent since Temple, which is – you know, more than a decade on the sideline. So that's a little surprising there. But if I'm a Nebraska fan, I feel pretty good about this year's team. I think the Big Ten obviously is top heavy. Nebraska's a team nobody's talking about. And if Raiola does beat Michigan in week four and gets off to that 6-7-0 start, I mean, this current price for Raiola is going to be a bargain as to what it'll be when Nebraska's unbeaten and inside the top 15. So I'm with you. I'm going Nebraska over there. Season win total, and there's a reason that many programs wanted Raiola to enter the portal this cycle, and Nebraska had to increase that NIL and keep him in tow.
All right, let's hit a couple very long shots here to wrap things up here, Brad, and we'll start with Damon Williams. You know, thinking back to your network, CBS, as I believe Gary Parrish says, the network of stars, the Sun Bowl had Washington and Louisville, and this was kind of the coming out party for Damon Williams. He had flashes, certainly played well against Oregon in a loss, but against Louisville, he was phenomenal down there in El Paso. And he's a quarterback that when I put together my initial rankings for this upcoming year, I left out. And then when I reevaluate everything, I'm like, whoa, I got to put Damon Williams as I believe I put him eighth in my, you know, returning quarterbacks in 2025. So this is a super long shot. He's 150-1 at Circa, but look, the proof is in the pudding. You know, I think Jed Fish, as time goes on, and this is no knock on Noah Fafita, but Noah Fafita is still at Arizona, and he was kind of a household name 2 years ago because of Jed Fish. So we've got a new offensive coordinator, Jed Fish still there, And you know, when you look at Damon Williams, you're looking at a super long shot here.
Yeah, he's going to likely have, you know, 10 touchdowns, 1,000 yards of offense his first three games before Washington hosts Ohio State. And that's a week five game, I think. And that's really the biggest game of the season for Jed Fish and Williams to kind of get in the national spotlight and potentially beat, you know, one of the preseason front runners. I talked to a lot of talent evaluators and scouts this offseason, man. Everybody mentioned Damon Williams as one of the top quarterbacks in the Big Ten. You're not seeing that nationally in a lot of articles or conversations, but everybody with their eyes who have scouted this guy, future NFL prospect, really like what Jed Fish has. We've seen Fish have success, like you said, at the quarterback spot previous times, and this is 100% his offense. Damon Williams is a guy who's slinky too. I mean, he can get out of the pocket and make plays, extend plays, almost a more athletic Tua Tagovailoa in a way, who had a great career at Bama in college. So Damon Williams, a guy that I'm buying high on. I think right now you can get him at a very, very reasonable price. But again, Washington has to improve as a team before Williams has a legitimate shot at winning this trophy.
Yeah, I think they're going to be a fun team. I don't know how great they're going to be. I know your colleague, Bud Elliott, when they were doing the long shots on their Cover 3 podcast had mentioned Washington as a long shot team to make the playoff. Challenging schedule, no doubt, but I'm curious to see that September 27th showdown when they bring Ohio State to town. That'll be pretty fun. All right, we'll wrap on this. You've got five other guys that are really long shots. Caleb Downs, Ohio State safety, Nicholas Singleton, running back from Penn State, Blake Horvath, who we alluded to, quarterback from Navy, Mekhi Hughes, running back of Oregon, and then Dylan Stewart, edge rusher from South Carolina. Dealer's choice, sir, as we wrap up with you, who would you like to highlight as your mega long shot to win the Heisman Trophy?
Yeah, I've already got a ticket on Mekhi Hughes at Oregon. I think he was the transfer portal's best running back, nearly 3,000 yards the last two seasons combined at Tulane against some pretty good competition. And with Oregon losing Evan Stewart, the former five-star wideout from A&M, he was going to be their top target in the passing game this season. They're going to have to rely on Mekhi Hughes to have a big year. And I still think Oregon's a team that can get back to the Big Ten championship game and is going back to the playoffs. So you're talking about a person that they're going to rely on in that backfield. Dante Moore's at quarterback. Oregon's had back-to-back Heisman finalists at that position under Will Stein's offense with Bo Nix. And then last year, Dylan Gabriel. But Mekhi Hughes, I think he is going to be one of the biggest impact transfers this cycle. And knowing Oregon is going to be a top 10 team throughout the season, yeah, I can't believe you can get him at, you know, plus 40,000 right now. I've got a ticket and I'm excited about Mekhi Hughes.
Yeah, check Circa earlier today as we record this on June 30th. They got it at 200-1. But yeah, look around, see what you can find there for the Oregon running back. Brad, really appreciate the time, man. Great stuff. And let's cast some long shots. Let's have a little fun this football season.
Hey, sounds good, buddy.
Thanks again to Brad Crawford for joining us here on the podcast. At bcrawford247 is where you can find him on social media. Some interesting stuff there and some thoughts on long shot bets to win the Heisman Trophy. And man, he made a really strong case for Mekhi Hughes, the transfer to Oregon, to be a Heisman Trophy winner, or at least a Heisman Trophy long shot. So Mekhi Hughes, still 400-1 to win the Heisman Trophy at FanDuel. I did want to update something real quickly because we had a conversation about Navy and he felt like Navy is getting overlooked a bit in not only the AAC, but also in the, to make the college football playoff market. And I mentioned that DraftKings is 8-1, which is true. That is the odds at DraftKings Sportsbook for Navy to make the college football playoff. However, as we always say, shop around. If you believe in Brad that Navy could be a team that makes a college football playoff, they are 18-1 at FanDuel to make the college football playoff. That's an intriguing look. Boise State, I had Brad Powers on the show on VSiN, the VSiN weekend morning line over the weekend, and he felt like Boise State is the best team amongst all group of five teams, is going to make the playoff again, has the benefit of the doubt. I would agree with all that sentiment. Plus 190, I believe, is their price at DraftKings to ultimately make the college football playoff. But at 18-1 for Navy, I could certainly be talked into making that bet. Because as we discussed with Brad, this is their schedule. VMI, UAB at Tulsa, bye week, Rice, who they lost to last year in a pretty big stunner. They were an 11-point favorite on the road at Rice and lost that game. Air Force at Temple, bye week, FAU at North Texas. That North Texas game could be weird because it's the week before taking on Notre Dame in prime time. And then you've got USF at home. Navy historically has been phenomenal at home on senior day, if you remove last year when they got absolutely curb stomped by Tulane, lost 35-0. Prior to that, it was very good. And then Thanksgiving night against Memphis. So it's a long shot for a reason. I wouldn't take it at 8-1, but 18-1, knowing what's coming back for this Navy team and knowing how the schedule shapes up, I think it's a pretty interesting look there for the midshipmen to make the college football playoff. So that would be something I would maybe take a look at there from a long shot standpoint to make the college football playoff. And before we wrap up, I did want to give a shout out here to first round leader Scoop at FRL Scoop. And he tweeted me because he's the one who had multiple tickets on Indiana to make the playoff a year ago. And he showed it to me. He had $20 and $35. So he was able to bring home, what, over $10,000 on Indiana making the playoffs. So well done. And he said, how about a shout out for Luke Scoop on the pod for those IU playoff tickets from last July. Let's find some winners in 2025. There you go, Luke Scoop. Great hit last year. Let's find some winners this year. All right, that's going to do it for the podcast. We will be back later this week with a fun conversation with Joshua Nunn, going through some situational spots and some win total bets that he has as well. Please rate, review, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Once again, this is the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast.